Welcome to Your Odyssey Podcast, where your guides, Tara and Karen, invite you on a transformative journey toward wholeness and personal growth. Each week, we'll discuss topics related to the human experience and offer insights to help you along the way. Please note, this podcast should not replace medical care or advice. We are not licensed healthcare professionals or mental health therapists. If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe so you don't miss out on our future discussions. So, explorers, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to today's episode in honor of World Suicide Prevention Day. We're going to have an open and honest conversation about suicide and what we can do to support those who are struggling. It's also National Suicide Prevention Week and Suicide Prevention Month. Suicide is a complex and sensitive topic, but it's one we need to address openly and without judgment. There are so many misconceptions about suicide, and one of the most damaging is the idea that talking about it will make things worse.
Oh, I read that too.
The truth is, open and honest conversations can save lives. We'll do a little myth busting throughout this episode.
These conversations are important. This conversation is going to be important and impactful. I can feel it. I love that the theme for 2024 to 2026 is changing the narrative on suicide, because we talk about it, you and I, about destigmatizing mental illness on the whole. And there's a lot of things that bring someone to the brink of wanting to take their own life. So it's a hard subject, y'all, but we're going to dive in with love, open hearts, and open minds.
Absolutely. To get started, let's discuss a few stats to better understand the timeline of suicide and suicide prevention. In 1958, the American Association of Suicidology was founded to understand and prevent suicide. Interestingly enough, that's also the same year that the first suicide prevention center opened in the U.S.
Where was that?
Los Angeles, and funded by the U.S. Public Health Service.
Wow, 1958. I am so surprised by that, because that was such a weird decade. I feel like we only thought about Hollywood and
I understand.
And the music artists. And,
or maybe that's why. It was in Los Angeles, so maybe. I don't know.
Interesting. Wow.
In 1960 came the first suicide hotline. The world's first suicide prevention hotline, Samaritans, was established in the United Kingdom.
Wow, that seems early and progressive. I would have said mid-70s.
Then we fast forward to the year 2003, when the World Suicide Prevention Day was established by the IASP, the International Association for Suicide Prevention, in conjunction with the World Health Organization.
And that seems late.
We had from 58 to 2003.
Right. If that was all happening then, why did we take so long to get to that point? Interesting.
And then the last was 14, when the WHO released the first global report on suicide prevention. That seems exceedingly late to me.
2014?
14.
The World Health Organization
released its first global report.
Wow. Yeah.
14.
That feels like a lot of years to collect data without saying anything.
That is quite a span of time.
Thank goodness it's happening. Mm-hmm. Information's getting out and statistics are being looked at. Conversations are being had.
All right. A couple of U.S. stats. In the U.S., suicide is the 11th leading cause of death.
I read that. I thought the 11th leading cause of death. Yeah. Gosh.
In 2022, I think this is from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
Yeah.
In 2022, there were an estimated 1.6 million suicide attempts.
And about 50,000 Americans who died by suicide that year.
The most alarming stat for me, I mean,
these are all alarming stats, don't get me wrong. 100%. But the one that hit me a little bit harder than the other ones was the age-adjusted suicide rate of 14.21. Like, that's a lot. That's very high.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow. Yeah.
Explain what that was again.
I think I was looking at all of the demographics, so ages of people who lost their life due to suicide, and calculating accordingly, because, you know, some things you have to wait for the official autopsy report to actually confirm that this cause of death was because of that.
Are you saying the median age?
I hope not.
I thought that's what you...
But it might be. It could be.
Because that, when I think I read that stat, and
read
I
it
like,
as the age of people.
Yeah, I read that too, and I was like, how is that possible?
But I know, we'll dig into that. Let's do a little bit more research on that one. So, global stats.
IASP.info, International.
What'd you find?
Association for Suicide Prevention. I just want people to have the website so they can go there and find some things out. But it says an estimated 703,000 people die by suicide worldwide each year.
That's nearly a million people.
That's a lot of peoples.
Three quarters of a million people.
Yeah. Over one in every 100 deaths in 2019 were the result of suicide. The global suicide rate is over twice as high among men than women. Suicide occurs across all regions in the world. However, over three quarters of global suicides in 2019 occurred in low and middle income countries. Those feel like dire numbers.
Yes.
That's hard to read. That's hard to process.
To wrap my brain around. The one that stuck out for me in the global statistics was the rate being twice as high among men than women. You and I have talked about this before, about how culturally conditioned not to speak up.
To be stoic.
Not to ask for help. To ignore their emotions, to bottle them in. So that's what really stuck out for me. As unfortunate as it is, I can see that.
Yes, it makes sense. There's only so long you can keep the cork in the bottle.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
And then the pressure has to come out some way. And at that point, sometimes people just feel too far gone. They feel too disconnected, too desperate, too sad. The emotion is so big, and it's already started to affect mental health. Mm-hmm. And then that all affects physical health, and it's just a spiral. They kind of all come together to create that desperation, I think.
Those U.S. and global stats are very dire, which reiterates that suicide is a global public health issue that needs our attention and concern.
Yes. It's so true. We have talked several times about the importance of mental health. And
we will speak on it so many more times.
So many more. We've already, like, the The subjects, the topics just keep on coming. We feel strongly about the fact that at the end of the day, we need to be talking about this. We need to be concerned. We need to engage. We need to notice and observe. There's a whole battery of things like warning signs, not just for suicide prevention, but mental health issues. And we need to take them seriously. If you see something, say something, right?
Campaign. Yes.
It's important to notice the people and the situations and to reach out.
Absolutely. Suicide rarely has a single cause. It's often a combination of stressors and health challenges that can make people feel hopeless and desperate. Mm-hmm. Suicide is also linked to brain functions that affect decision making and behavior control, which can make it hard for people to find positive solutions.
Right. And do more impulsive, reactionary things to end their pain.
Yes.
So all of that kind of clouds and impacts the situation.
Mm-hmm. 90% of people who die by suicide have an underlying and potentially treatable mental health condition. So like Karen said, it's important, as we look out into our community, to pay attention to some of those contributing factors: depression, bipolar disorder, substance abuse. Mm-hmm. Those things are strongly linked to suicidal thinking and behavior.
Yeah. The more this is talked about, the more people will understand what to look for and recognize the warning signs.
Let's talk about some of those warning signs now.
Because if you're noticing a change in behavior or the presence of an entirely new behavior mm-hmm. that seems concerning, there's a good chance that something is going on, that people are feeling desperate. If that change is related to a loss or some kind of event, a life event or a painful event, then that's going to compound how dramatic I think the behavior comes out, how pronounced it is.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be aware. We have to pay attention.
Yeah.
Most people who take their lives exhibit one or more warning signs, either through what they say or what they do.
Hmm. So let's talk about what they say and what they do. I found a breakdown of a couple of examples of passive versus active.
This is going to be really helpful.
Passive means someone is thinking about suicide. These thoughts are common, but should still be taken seriously. They can be a symptom of depression, anxiety, grief, or other major life challenges. Ask the question, will this person be safe on their own for the next 24 hours? Passive thoughts sound like, I wish I didn't exist. I can't keep living like this. I wish I wouldn't wake up tomorrow.
I've heard those statements from people. So I just need a minute. Poof. Yeah. It's important to take those seriously. You know, someone is not, they may be just tweaking it, seeing how it affects people, but most likely mm-hmm. they're feeling it deeply and it's of concern.
Absolutely. Even reading them, they were heavy. Active means a person has a plan, time, and method in place. These thoughts should be treated as an emergency that requires immediate action. If you can, do not leave them alone and try to make their means to act as inaccessible as possible.
Mm.
Active thoughts of suicide sound like, I have a plan to end my life. I won't be here by next week, month, holiday, etc. I could get rid of myself right now.
Now that's right. If we're around it, we're noticing, observing, witnessing, listening. I want to speak to those feelings and those active and passive thoughts and patterns of speech.
Mm-hmm.
And just tell people that there is help. There are suicide prevention hotlines that are active 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If you have a cell phone, you can call or text 988 or text TALK, T-A-L-K, to 741-741. If you yourself are feeling these feelings and having these thoughts and ideas, or you're around someone who does, that you know this to be able to immediately help them.
Yes. There are so many resources available, be it crisis lines, if you or someone you know is experiencing or expressing some of these warning signs, or if you just want to have a bit more information and education so you know what to be aware of.
If there's someone in your life that you're thinking, they seem like things are changing, or they seem different, or I'm noticing this heaviness or this weight or this grayness about them, or there's something that feels hopeless or desperate, you can reach out to these hotlines to learn, and also the websites have lots of great information, learn how to have a conversation with mm-hmm. that person, learn what to look for, and learn how to take action yourself.
Okay. Let's spend a little time busting a couple of myths about suicide.
I'm intrigued by this and I'm looking forward to this because I think these are really important differentiations to make.
Yeah. Yes. The first myth, suicide is selfish. Mm-hmm. The truth is, it's oftentimes the exact opposite. Many people who attempt or die by suicide feel like they are a burden to the people in their lives. Their pain and their intrusive thoughts can convince them that the world would be better off without them. In their mind, suicide is the least selfish option because of feeling like a burden.
Hmm. Yeah. I can't tell you how many people I've heard say that back when I was younger. How could they do that? They're so selfish. Now they left behind all these people. They are not thinking that. If they get to that point, they're not thinking clearly. They're not making rational, healthy decisions and asking for help. Mm. They're at the end point.
Where this is the only option that they see.
That they see. This is the only option. This is the only way to fix this. This is the only way out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Another myth. You can't ask someone if they are thinking about suicide.
Why did our cultures think that?
Asking the question will make someone suddenly
be like, you know what? That's a great idea. Now that you say that, actually, no, that's not what happens. Tell us the truth, Tara.
Instead, it allows them to be honest about what they're experiencing. We want to be thoughtful about how we phrase the question so the person feels safe and not judged. Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking of hurting yourself? Those are neutral ways of asking.
Yeah, we don't have to demand why or how. Just, is this something that you're considering? I'm noticing or feeling that you've been really low, or you've been speaking about feelings of hopelessness or not being able to do anything good with your life, or whatever the signals are.
Mm-hmm.
And asking that question is open-ended. It's not really leading. It's just saying, are you? And then if they are in touch and answering honestly, then you move forward to help them get help. Mm.
Another myth. Threats of suicide are just for attention.
Oh, good Lord. Sorry.
Now, I know we some self-centered people.
Beings, creatures.
Yes. By nature, by design, I'm not sure which is which. But if someone says this to you, they're more than likely seeking connection and support. You have become or present as a safe, judgment-free space for them.
So in a way, we could say, yes, they are seeking attention.
For help.
They're seeking attention, noticing that they need help. That you're a safe person, they can say that too, and they're asking for help in their own way.
Final myth. I don't have a role in preventing suicide.
What
can I do?
There was nothing I can do.
This is a global thing. What could I, little old me, possibly do?
It's a big problem. I don't know anybody who's thinking about committing suicide.
Or do you?
Look around. Pay attention.
From the small personal connections to supporting big systemic changes, we can all play a role in suicide prevention. Karen and I are hoping to do that by creating space for open and honest conversations with your people.
Mm.
One really good way to get people to understand that you are a safe space is by sharing your own vulnerabilities.
Mm.
Share how you're doing. If you're struggling, tell them. Just you being the example of being vulnerable, open, honest, without fear of judgment, that can move mountains.
Yeah, that can open the gate. Even sharing about the lowest of the low times, even if it's not current. Like, I've been through some really low times where I just didn't have hope, and encouraging someone to maybe see the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like this episode, because it's so heavy and it's a lot for us as we even talk about it, as we navigate it with as much respect and care as we can, I feel like this is not going to be one of our longer episodes.
Mm, I agree.
But in that, one of the goals here is to break the stigma. You've probably heard Karen and I talk before about mental health and the importance of talking about it, breaking the silence, changing the narrative, starting the conversation. Breaking the silence and stigma is crucial in creating an inclusive space for those struggling with mental health issues. It's also a big reminder that reaching out for help is not a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. It's actually strength.
The idea of admitting, coming to terms with, and stating, this is how I'm doing and it's not great, is challenging.
There are always people and resources available to support you if you're struggling. Whether it's a trusted friend or family member, a mental health professional, one of the support hotlines Karen referenced earlier, there are people who care and want to help.
I know people who are involved in workshops and promoting conversations about suicide prevention, and it's important work. These organizations are also there for anyone who has already lost someone mm-hmm. to suicide.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of pain and there's grief and there's healing that needs to happen when that occurs. Because I think our tendency is, why didn't I see it? You know, I wish I would have seen it. What could I have done? There's a lot of self-flagellation and shame that comes with when someone close to you takes their life. And so these organizations are there to help that as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think the more we educate ourselves about the warning signs, the active and passive statements and things that people may say to us, the more we educate ourselves about those things, we then are empowered to do everything that we can to support them. It's not necessarily saying that we will change their mind or whatever, but we want people to know that they're not alone. So the more we know, the more we can help. And I hope and I pray that anyone working through the stages of bereavement related to a suicide loss get the support that they need so that weight that they carry is lessened.
Yes. Yeah. It's just such a loaded topic, but I do think that you're right. The awareness and the knowledge, the education, the how do I talk to someone, mm-hmm. having those things in your tool belt so that you're ready. I mean, it might be someone at work. It might be someone in your family. It might be someone that you see on the street, for mm-hmm. crying out loud. And there's so many factors. There's so many things that contribute. Mental health is genetic, like family history mm-hmm. thing. So if there's a family history of suicide, or if there's been childhood trauma or abuse, and generational trauma is another big thing, because people feel like there's really no way out and it has been that way for generations. All of these things that isolate people and help them to feel hopeless mm-hmm. and desperate and alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw something before we move about mm-hmm. protective factors that I thought was really helpful. These are some things that we can encourage or embrace, which is having access to mental health care and being proactive about mental health for yourself or others that you know is really top line.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling connected to family and having community support, reaching out to someone or connecting people with the resources they need, talking through problem solving or coping skills with people. These are all proactive measures that we can take to help the people around us.
Okay. I don't know about you, Karen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I'm ready.
Yep.
I'm past ready to move a little bit. Explorers, today's song is released in conjunction with the AFSP's Talk Away the Dark campaign. It is by Carrie Underwood and Papa Roach. The song is Leave a Light On, in parentheses, Talk Away the Dark.
So we're going to listen now and take that in.
Check out this week's song on the Yo Podcast playlist on Spotify.
You know, that was just perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Listeners, I hope you all find that song. I actually think there's a link to it on the AFSP.org, American Federation of Suicide Prevention on one of their pages, there's a link to that beautiful song.
Yes.
Let's leave the light on for people. Let's be the light for people.
Be the light. Oh, yes. Today's question of the day.
Oh, boy.
I feel like we've already covered it. It's going to be okay.
Okay. Well, at least we're laughing a little bit. You know, my reaction to the, if I don't know, like I briefly glance, but if I don't really know the question of the day, listeners, I'm always like, oh boy, here it comes. I don't know if I'm going to have an answer.
Okay. The QOTD. What are the most significant barriers to accessing mental health resources for suicide prevention, and how can they be addressed?
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many big feelings about how certain demographics and populations don't have access to mental health resources, and we need to do better. Mm-hmm. We need to reach more people. I think the suicide prevention hotlines are beautiful and wonderful, but we're talking about having consistent long-term mental health support for people so that it doesn't get to that point.
Yes.
So that life can feel manageable and that they could learn skills or be on medication or whatever it is they need. We need to expand the reach of these resources, of clinics in rural areas. We have to do better.
Yeah. Expanding options, be it through telehealth or clinics, especially in these underserved areas, mm-hmm. is crucial. I think that something else that piggybacks off of that is the financial constraints. Can we talk about the affordability of mental health services?
And can we also talk about that it should be like food, roof over your head, mental health support?
In this country, what did we say? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those things you mentioned. Support. All three of those.
Yeah, it's all in there. So, I mean, it should be as important as making sure people have healthy food, medical care, mental health care, a safe place. These are just basic human needs.
Another way that we can address some of these barriers is by integrating mental health education into school curriculums. Mm-hmm. And workplace wellness programs. In the past few years, especially since the pandemic, in my workplace, I've seen more of an emphasis on mental health education and tools and resources available at no charge to employees. But before we even get into the workplace.
Like, let's let our children know.
Yes.
Let's teach them from a young age, right?
Because adults are not the only people, or employed people are not the only people that die by suicide.
Once we begin teaching our children about mental health issues and support that is available, then they bring that up into adulthood. And so the cycle begins.
We said it a little bit earlier, the more education that we have promotes our awareness, mm-hmm. which breaks down another barrier, the stigma associated with suicide. So if we're educating, we are making people aware of signs, symptoms, contributing factors. We go so far into destigmatizing various mental health issues.
It affects it across.
And then another one, because I don't know if this has been your experience, Karen, but I know personally in my life I've seen that not necessarily all healthcare providers and community members can help identify and provide support to those at risk. So there are certain, let's see, what is the most diplomatic way that I can say this?
This is going to be good.
Certain healthcare professionals who are not as
maybe
educated.
Maybe a little more old school.
Yeah, educated and aware of the
connection.
Mm-hmm.
How it all comes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
And what to look for.
Yeah. Or just the blinders, I want to say, in their own mind about what it looks like, what it means, the weight it carries, or the stigma attached to it. Like, I don't know. Mm-mm. not my job, not my role. But as we said earlier, this is something everybody can contribute to.
We all have a stake in this.
Right.
We can all play a part. We all do play a part.
I think that's it.
That was well said. That was really good.
Thank you.
There's help. There are resources. You're not alone. And there are people that want you to stay, to stick around. If you're having those thoughts, just reach out, please, to someone. If you know somebody who's having those thoughts or you think they're having those thoughts, even if you're wrong, be wrong, but don't be silent.
Yeah. I found a quote by one of the resources that I use in my research for this episode was in a nonprofit organization, To Write Love on Her Arms, TWLOHA. And this quote is from the founder, Jamie Twerkowski, a New York Times bestselling author of the book If You Feel Too Much, and founder of the nonprofit organization TWLOHA. This life, this night, your story, your pain, your hope, it matters. All of it matters. You're loved. You matter to this world, and you matter to the people who love you. So stay. Please stay. No one else can play your part.
I feel that. That's deep and beautiful.
So thank you, Jamie, for that. Fun fact for Karen, he was born in Morehead City, North Carolina.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's a surfer. As we wrap up, explorers, we want to remind you, it's okay not to be okay. For anyone out there who may be struggling, please know that you are not alone. There is hope, help, and a way forward. Your life is valuable. We're also reaching out to everyone else, family members, friends, coworkers, community members. We all have a role to play in suicide prevention. It could be as simple as checking in on someone, listening without judgment, and guiding them to professional help. Let's continue to break the stigma and build a world where everyone feels comfortable seeking help when they need it. Your actions can make a significant difference. If you or someone you know is in crisis, please reach out for help. You can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Or text HELLO to 741. You can also reach out to the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by texting 988. You can reach out to the Veterans Crisis Line by texting 83825. And you can also reach out to Trevor Lifeline, specifically for LGBTQ+ community, by texting 678-678 or calling 1-866-488-7386. Thank you so much for joining us for this important conversation. Together, we can make a difference and save lives.
It's time to have the conversations, my friends. Explorers, thanks for being here with us. Take good care.
Thank you to Queenie's in downtown Durham for the use of their community podcast studio and for welcoming us so warmly each week. We'd like to give a shout out to Coco Cinnamon, the birthplace of 1023 Media and the Yo Podcast. Please support your local, women-owned, minority-owned coffee shop in downtown Durham. Brought to you by Durham-based 1023 Media, a heart-centered, woman-owned multimedia company